Anita Gillette from the musical Mr. President, a song called The Secret Service. But it's no secret that we have on the telephone with us the Tony-nominated actress and also appeared tons of time on television, everything from Law & Order to a bunch of game shows throughout like the 1970s and 80s. And, of course, we also remember her as Liz Lemon's mom on 30 Rock, and if you want to see her singing and in the flesh and telling stories about her life, everybody get thee to Birdland on Monday, this coming Monday, January 30th at 7 o'clock, because she'll be doing, after all, her autobiographical cabaret show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the neighborhood, Anita Gillette. Good morning, Anita. How are you?
Good morning. It's afternoon, though, really. Hi.
Oh, that's right. You're out in the wilds of New York. We're in Colorado,
right
here.
Where are you, Dave?
Colorado. Northern Colorado.
Colorado.
So. Yeah, I know.
Oh, wow. Beautiful out there.
It is. But are you shooting a movie also in New York, or where's your movie?
I am. Yes, I am. I've just gotten another kid, Ed Burns. I'm playing his mother. I play everybody's mother.
Well.
So now I've got another kid, Ed Burns, as I say. He just hired me to be his mother in a movie he's shooting, sort of a guerrilla kind of movie. You know, the I'm in guerrilla movie making, like Woody Allen, where you get up on your feet and you sort of improvise and do things and shoot it with digital film. And it's wild, the way of shooting movies, but I'm enjoying myself. Long hours, though.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, Christopher Guest does that sort of technique as much as anyone, too. And it sometimes pays off marvelous results. Can you say the name of the movie?
Christmas, Fitzgerald Christmas.
A Fitzgerald Christmas, okie dokie.
That's right.
And it's due out next Christmas? Is that?
Well, we hope, whenever. It's by next Christmas, I guess. And we're taking advantage of some people's homes which still have Christmas trees set up in them. You know, I guess that's why we're doing it now. He's doing it now. And it's just a family kind of comedy drama kind of thing, a family situation. And it's fun, and you could shed a few tears, too. So, but Eddie is a great guy to work for. I'm enjoying it so very much. Ed Lauder is in it. He's also in The Artist, and he's been in everything, Ed Lauder. He's just one of those character men that everybody knows his face. He's a wonderful actor, and I'm very pleased to be working with him as well.
Well, do you have a preference now as far as would you rather be handed a script and then know exactly what you're going to say, or are you enjoying, I mean, you do have a theater background, so maybe the improv nature of what you're doing is somehow preferable.
I tell you, every time I do film, I learn something, and especially since I'm learning this this different technique, you know, it wasn't that way when I did Moonstruck, you know, with Norman Jewison, that was scripted, and that's John Patrick Shanley, and you don't mess with that. And, you could have ideas, and Norman was always open to ideas about words and changes and stuff, but this is different. This is almost like acting class, and there is a script, you know, but we usually do the scene that's written, but then Eddie will say, now, what would you have to say? If you didn't say those words, what would you do? And then sometimes he uses what you come up with, you know.
Right.
And, but the skeleton is certainly there. And a lot of his words, most of his words, I think, I use because he's a good writer.
Speaking of good writers,
yes. There's nothing like live, you know, doing it up there. That's what I think is the thrill.
And
is doing a live performance.
Well, yeah, and of course you've done a ton of Broadway, and you mentioned earlier working with Woody Allen. You were doing Don't Drink the Water back in 1966.
Yeah, you remember that? Oh, you.
Well, I don't remember it, but I BDB'd it. Yeah. So, any thoughts on what he was like back in 1966?
You know, from what I gather, although Eddie says he's never met Woody Allen, although he emulates him, he loves Woody Allen, you know.
Who doesn't?
He's just never met him, and I said, gee, if I ever see him again, I'll introduce him. Because Woody was always, when we were at the theater and working on the show, we went out of town and to Boston and all, and he came by. He was in a hotel close by, probably the Ritz, and he would show up at the theater, but he would hang out in the back, you know, in the dark. He was very shy. He didn't come to the, you know, come round to the dressing rooms and be friendly and all that. But we got changes via the director and the stage manager. We would always get what Woody's thoughts were, one way or another. But he was there, but just didn't get to spend time with him. I think Tony Roberts became a friend of his.
Yeah.
And they spent some social time together. But the rest of the cast, we were not in on that.
Okay.
However, he surprised me because I guess it was in the set. When did The Front come out? You know, Woody Allen's, but he
77-ish or maybe 75?
Right?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, and I had been doing a show with Knickerbocker Holiday with Burt Lancaster in Los Angeles. And Burt got a table together because he was a big with the ACLU, you know. And they presented ACLU, American Civil Liberty,
right.
Civil Liberty Union, Woody with an award for that movie. And Burt's table, where I was sitting, was in the path that Woody took to go to the stage to get the award. And the spotlight was on him, and the music was playing, and he was on his way up to the stage, and he saw me sitting at Burt's table, and I thought if he was going to stop, which it looked like he was going to do, he would go to Burt, but he didn't. He stopped, and he looked at me, and he said, Anita, what are you doing out here in this godforsaken place? Get back to New York. He really disliked Los Angeles.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if you saw Annie Hall, he made that abundantly
exactly.
clear.
Yeah.
So, since you bring it up, what was it like working with Burt Lancaster?
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. He was so dedicated. He wanted to sing so much. I mean, he didn't have the greatest voice, but neither did Walter Houston when he sang September Song. And that was the part he was doing. And you know, he played Peter Stuyvesant, who had a pegged leg.
Oh.
And I can't remember which leg authentically was the pegged leg. But Burt had a terribly bad knee. And it turned out that the authentic peg leg was on his bad knee because he had to fold his knee up, you know.
Oh.
And, I mean, fold his leg up and put his knee in this brace thing that they concocted for him. And he would not change knees, even though nobody in the world would know whether it was the left or the right. He said, believe me, somebody in that audience will look it up and make sure which knee it is, and I'm going to do it on the correct knee. So he was very dedicated guy and loved music and loved, he was a libertarian, I know, and it was a cause that he believed in, you know, to do away with war, and anyway, that was what the Knickerbocker Holiday was, all
cool.
politics, and he was just a lovely man to work with. He was very caring. He always showed up. He accepted criticism, begged for criticism, and he was just a really great guy. I adored him.
That is so cool. I mean, I'm not looking, by the way, but a lot of the guests, when we talk on Dave's Gone By, they figure I'm digging for dirt or bad stories. And no, I just want to hear stories. I just want to hear about these legends that people work with, good and uh-huh. or bad, you know, and it's great to hear that someone's wonderful. It really is. Now,
yeah.
Which
well,
is why,
I know, you
yeah.
know, I never believe anything bad about somebody until I really know it, because the press does such terrible things to people. And I mean, there are some people that have been done bad things, you know.
Oh, like who? Come on.
Oh, you are something. Well, I guess Dustin Hoffman.
Really?
Oh, yes.
You have personal experience. What? What did he do?
Well, first of all, when he was doing Death of a Salesman, a friend of mine was playing one of the hookers, you know, in the...
Right, that Biff and Happy...
That he meets in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And off stage, she would be waiting in the wings, and he would come up from behind her and grab her boobs from the back, you know, and it was harassment. And that was a very unpleasant kind of...
Was he doing it in character the way Willie Loman
would? No, I mean, it's off stage. You don't do that to people off stage.
Right.
I mean, you don't get into character that way. Mm. That is not acceptable.
Yeah. No, I hate it when people grab my boobs when I'm not expecting it.
Well, depending on who's grabbing mine, I hate it. Or
Well, who's been grabbing your boobs lately, Amy and Gillette? America wants to know.
Well, I have a boyfriend. Who's a Brit. Oh. He's on his way over here today.
Is he an actor?
No, he's not an actor. No. I've never been married to actors. I've been married twice, and neither one of them was an actor. No, this guy is in insurance. He was a member of Lloyd's of London.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we're both widowed, and... Mm. He's retired, and we have a long-distance relationship, which is fine.
Well, as long as you can see each other a couple of times a year, he'll fly out. You, I guess, can fly to England.
Yeah,
now.
We go back and forth, and it's more than a couple of times a year. It's been going on for quite a while.
Do you see number three in your crystal ball, or is it fine the way it is?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, it would be difficult to get married because I don't want to leave... As long as I'm working, I don't think I can work as much over there as I do here. And he can't. His mother is 100.
Wow.
He's an only child, and so he can't leave his mother.
Oh, there you go.
He's a young thing and cannot leave his mother.
Jewish guy? No. Just kidding. Jewish guy?
What?
Oh no, I asked Jewish guy. Because Jewish men and their mothers, that kind of thing. I was just sort of teasing, sort of.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know that. I just got a joke on the internet about a mother, Jewish mother in Florida, whose son calls her, and he asks how she is, and she says, not so good. I'm not doing very well. Haven't eaten in days, 37 days I haven't eaten. What? You haven't eaten? Why haven't you eaten so long? Because I didn't want to have my mouth full of food in case you called.
Oh, yes. And I will allow Anita Gillette to make those jokes, even though I assume you are not Jewish. I don't know how you got on Broadway.
No, I don't think I am. I mean, I don't know back when. You know, when I saw that thing about, you know, the TV show about tracing your ancestors, you really don't know. So, but sure. I don't think I am. I had a lot of German relatives.
Ah.
And my name was Lubin.
Oh, was it really? So you were born Lubin?
Lubin, Lubben.
So where did your last name come? Did you name yourself after the razor company?
That was from my first husband, Dr. Gillette.
That makes sense.
I talk about him in my show.
What are the anecdotes you tell about your first husband in, by the way?
Well, we met over an autopsy report. An autopsy. I used to.
What?
I was a medical stenographer in Baltimore, and I worked at the Army Chemical Center in the biophysics division, taking down autopsy reports on dead animals. obviously.
Well, that's a fun career.
Well, I loved science. I mean, I still do love science. I'm fascinated by it. And Dr. Gillette was stationed in the Army, and we met over an autopsy. That's really
what animal?
You were standing over a
table with a dead animal, and he asked you out.
He was very impressed with my stenography, I guess. The fact that I could spell, I could write down all those medical terms. I say in my show, when I typed his paper, the effects of deoxycorticosterone in chick fibroblasts, I fell madly in love. He was irresistible even after we were married, and he'd bring his work home, little petri dishes filled with mouse ears to keep in the refrigerator over the weekend. I may not have been gone to college, but Dr. Gillette tried to teach me all the same, and I was a very willing pupil. Did you say I've got a lot to learn? Then I do teach me tonight.
Wow. Okay. Exactly. That is so, so deeply romantic. I've got to tell you.
It's funny, I think.
Oh, you know, it is very, very funny and true. It's a real, I mean, talk about a meet cute. I've never heard that before. How did you meet your current beau, by the way, the insurance fella?
We were set up by mutual friends.
Oh.
Who knew him in London, and then they got transferred to New York, and I met them, and then they put us together.
That is so cool.
So,
yeah.
It is cool. I'm a very lucky woman.
Well, yeah, and we're very lucky to be talking with Anita Gillette here in the neighborhood. And I've got to do that more of that thing of just asking you about these people that you've worked with. You can't help it in this business. Your first Broadway role was in Gypsy, one of the great musicals of all time. Ethel Merman stories.
I was a replacement understudy to Dainty June. The first one. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in from the very beginning, but when Lane Bradbury left and then her understudy moved in to take over her job, I took over the understudy job. And that's how I met Ethel Merman, who was a great influence on me.
Really?
I thought she was an amazing talent. And a very nice person. I don't care what anybody says.
Okay.
She was wonderful.
Yes. But the one thing that she wouldn't have...
She saved my job, you know.
I'm sorry?
She saved my job.
In what way?
Ethel Merman. Yeah.
How?
Because I didn't know I was pregnant when I got into the show. By the time I found out, I guess I'd endeared myself to her because I used to go down in the wings and watch her every night do Rose's Turn. And boy, I learned a lot from that. But when she heard they were going to fire me, she said, oh, no, the kid stays in the show. I mean, so she doesn't do the splits. She can still do the cartwheels. You can still do the cartwheels, right? Yeah, she can still do the cartwheels. The kid stays in the show. And I did. I stayed in it.
Until
8 months.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you didn't give birth on stage or anything. You birthed a new Dainty June. Yeah.
Nothing that sensational, honey.
No, but that's so cool. I mean, I have not heard really nasty stories, by the way, about Ethel Merman. Just the fact that her motto was, when a show's frozen, it's frozen. When she knows her lines, that's it. Not a change, not changing the dot on an I. And I think it's kind of interesting that you're doing
really
a movie now, but it's the opposite.
Because I've never gone through the process. You know, never went through that process with her.
Oh.
By the time I got in the show, it certainly was frozen. It had been running for a bit, so.
Yeah.
No, she was, I don't know, because there are people who say not nice things about her.
Well, I'm sure she was stubborn. Let's leave it at that. But how about, here's someone who everybody says not nice things about, David Merrick, the producer.
Ah, David Merrick.
Yeah.
I owe him a lot.
Okay.
I owe him a lot. And he was tricky, let's say, you know. I mean, First of all, he and Albert Getty were having a feud when I was understudying Anna Maria Albert Getty in Carnival, and so he, you know, he sent her plastic roses in the hospital when she went in. She had some sort of procedure, and he didn't believe she was sick, and that's when he promoted me. He made a media blitz out of my taking over the show that night. You know, I did it for a week. And he was, but he really, he always said nice things about me. He told my friend William Wolfe, the critic, that that if he had known I was as good as I was, he would have given the job to me. But that, you know, you don't, that, as I said, there was a feud going on, so.
Well,
with him and her.
But by the way, say hi to.
Great to me.
Great. So say hi to William Wolfe for me. We've been old friends for like 20, 25 years. We're both theater critics.
Oh, I adore him. And
he's
Lillian.
So cool.
Do you know his wife too?
Oh yeah, I've seen them all the time. Well, back when I was in New York, I'd see them at the theater, and he was running the drama desk for about, you know, 5-10 years. So
right.
I knew him from that.
Ah.
So.
Okay. No, I adore both of them. David, my beau, my English beau, and I, we double date with them. We go out to dinner a lot. He's going to come to see my show.
Cool. I'm sure he will, yeah. So say
even
hi to him.
The Nightlife Awards turned out to be on the same night. But I think we're doing really good. You know, I think a lot of people are still coming to see my show.
Well, let's remind everybody that your show is at Birdland this Monday,
yes.
January 30th, 7 p.m.
Yes.
It's, yes, yes.
At 7 o'clock, yes. I'm so excited.
Have you done this elsewhere? I mean, now you're bringing it
you
to
know,
me.
Dave, this is my cabaret debut. I mean, I did this on a stage in Baltimore, my hometown, in front of my relatives, you know, but at the University of Baltimore. And just as a sort of workshop kind of thing, because it's autobiographical material, half of which I've just spilled on your show. So I mean, a lot of the stuff material I've used already. But I tell stories, and I was sort of concerned, you know. Barry Kleinbart is putting it together for me.
Oh yeah.
And I said, Barry, do you really think people in a nightclub are going to want to hear my stories about, I thought you're not supposed to talk too much, keep the patter at a minimum, and do a lot of singing. And he said, consider your stories as numbers, if you will, because yes, people want to hear about those things. They want to hear about Ethel Merman, and they want to hear about David Merrigan. So I'm trusting that in this group anyway, everybody's going to be interested in hearing these stories, and a lot of them are funny, I think.
Well, I mean, you've seen, or either on stage, or maybe you've rented Elaine Stritch at Liberty, the show that she did about 8 or 10 years ago at the Public.
I saw that.
Yeah.
She's brilliant.
I mean, she did the songs, of course, but it was the stories, too, that,
Right. That's right. And, I mean, if it were a stage play and I could tell all the full stories, you know, I have to keep my act down to like 70, 75 minutes at the most. And you just can't tell everything.
Sure.
You know, in that amount of time. But I do get into quite a few of them.
What are some of the others? Or what are one or two that you didn't have time for in your act that you had to cut but you really wanted to tell?
Well,
Oh, Anita, are you there? Oh,
Can you hear me?
Ah, that's better. Your phone kind of started cutting out. Yeah.
I was drifting away. Okay, maybe I better get closer to the bass. Anyway, no, it was. I say in my show that I'd like to, you know, I'm going to sing some songs, tell some stories, and settle a few scores. Both musical and otherwise, and I don't settle all the scores. Like, I don't tell the story, you know, like my story about Dustin Hoffman, which I don't tell either one of those stories about him. But
Well, your story wasn't about you.
It wasn't about me, but I do have a story about that, and that was that when I went into, I was doing the Murray Siskel's play Roadshow down at the Circle Rep when it was on 7th Avenue and up and running. And
The Broadway Circle Rep or the Off-Broadway Circle Rep?
The Off-Broadway.
Okay.
Off-Broadway Circle Rep. And I went Murray said that at that time there was the part of the hooker he meets in Las Vegas was a real part, and he wanted me, Murray Siskel, to go meet Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman and read for the hooker. And I went up to this hotel room, where they were staying at one of the big fancy hotels, and for breakfast. To just have sort of a little meeting and maybe a little reading. And I don't know if I can tell this without getting sued. Can you get sued for
telling the truth of what happened? Well, why don't you change their names? Instead of Dustin Hoffman, we'll call him Daryl Heffernan, and Tom Cruise we can call Tim Corcoran. No, wait, I know a Tim Corcoran. Tommy Kaflangus. Okay, so you're with Daryl Heffernan, and you're auditioning for this movie, not Rain Man, we'll call it Cloudy Guy. Okay, you're auditioning for Cloudy Guy. And?
Oh, God, I don't know. So I'm probably letting myself in for a lot of flack. I don't edit myself very well sometimes. But anyway, he just said, "Geez, you look so familiar to me. Haven't I slept with you?" And I'd never met the man before. And I said, "Well, if you did, you must not have been very good because I sure don't remember you."
Okay, good comeback.
And that shut him up.
Oh. Oh, that's okay. Wow, I was expecting something really like, he was chasing him around the room with a machete or something. No.
Well, maybe I overplayed it.
But yeah.
I mean, I thought that was a good comeback.
No, actually, that reminds me of a story. Do you know Jason Grah, the actor from also Cabaret and Off-Broadway?
Jason
Grae, Jason Grah. Very, very talented.
Oh, yes.
Jason, well, I'll keep this as short as possible, but I had known him when I was running the box office for a little off-Broadway show that he was in, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. So I had him call in on this program, Dave's Gone By, to talk to him and wanted to check if he remembered me from all those years ago when I was just doing box office and he was in this show. And, I got him on the phone, so okay, and I was kind of trying to egg him on to see if he had any recollection. And he just had this, you could tell he really sort of meant it. And he was like, did we sleep together? And
oh,
I was like, no, yeah. No, Jason, I'm married. No, it wasn't anything like that. No. But it was this marvelous little moment.
Yeah.
We didn't, by the way. Just so. Well, that's not a terrible Dustin Hoffman. I mean, it doesn't make him sound like the nicest person, but if he sues over that, yeah.
I understand that he's mellowed, though, over the years. I don't know for sure, But most people I find are really nice. I mean, if I don't have terrible encounters with them, I can't, or I don't know people that have, then I don't. I can't believe a lot of the stuff I read in the, all the rumors about, Tom Cruise was a doll at that meeting. He was just a real gentleman and a wonderful, receptive to listening to me read, and I didn't feel embarrassed or anything in front of him, but Dustin made me very nervous.
Hmm.
And actually, Murray Siskel sort of apologized later because I was doing his show, as I said.
Right.
And but most of the people, like Bert and I mean, you couldn't find more of a if you're going to talk about a real man, a real stud kind of guy.
Yeah.
He was the epitome of that.
Burt Lancaster, you mean?
And, he was a gentleman.
Oh, yeah. Can I ask, also, we talked about Woody Allen before, but you got your Tony nomination for doing Chapter 2 on Broadway.
That's right.
One of the best Neil Simon plays. Any thoughts and memories of Neil Simon at that point?
All I know is that I felt that for so many years, Neil Simon's work was so underrated because he was Neil Simon and did all those jokes and the funny stuff that he did. Critics didn't take him seriously. And, you know, he never got a Tony until, what was it, Broadway Bound?
I think so, yeah.
Or Biloxi Blues, maybe. I think it was Biloxi Blues. And when I was nominated, he came to my dressing room and he said, you know, Anita, if my name were Harold Pinter, I think you would win this award. But since my name is Neil Simon, I hate to tell you, but I don't think you're going to win. And not the fact that I didn't win it, Jessica Tandy won it that year, but I just thought, wow, that's awful. That because his work is, I think he's brilliant.
Oh, of course.
And there's a rhythm to his words, the same as there is to Pinter. You know, the Pinter pauses that one has to take. And the rhythm of Pinter, there is certainly a rhythm to Neil Simon. And if you miss an article or you miss an adjective, it just doesn't work. And you really have to pay strict attention to his words, I'll tell you that.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I've acted Neil Simon, and I love Simon's work. And I was saying this about 15, 20 years ago when I would see the New York Times and other places praise and sometimes overpraise very, very talented, very good playwrights who were writing dramas and comedy dramas. And they would just go over the moon about some funny lines in some show. And
yeah.
Meanwhile, I would say, Neil Simon's been doing this better for 30 years, and yet he doesn't get the props. He's just a joke
That's
machine.
Right.
To you all, and it always bothered me. And then Simon proved everybody when he did that trilogy, and he said, oh, you want me to be more serious? You want me to be even better than
yeah.
I was? Okay, here we go. And he
right.
did.
Exactly. No, he really is one of our greats. And it doesn't work everywhere. It doesn't work in England. If they use English actors in particular, they just can't get the New York rhythm right. They just can't. That the rhythm of the speech, they can't do it.
Well, I assume the same thing happens when they bring Ray Cooney over here. You know, they have to have English actors do it. Ekborn has worked here, actually. So, not sure about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have a couple more minutes, by the way?
Okay.
Great.
You're going to edit all this, right?
We're live. This is a lot. You're live. Calling in live to the...
I know it.
Okay. Whew. Okay. I'm glad the Dustin Hoffman story wasn't that bad. All right. Let's see.
Me too. I wouldn't tell it if it were.
I do have a couple of left field questions. One of them brought to me by a reader, and this dovetails with some of the game shows that you were doing way back when. Well, not
yes.
way back when. Just like I was already watching them. So, ask Anita, that be you, about compressed garbage. I'll explain.
Good grief.
My father got a client on What's My Line, and Anita was a panelist, and this was while you were doing Sally Bowles on Broadway, and he even remembers your green nail polish. The panelists apparently all got this guy's product. It was garbage that was supposedly compressed into sanitary briquettes. And unfortunately, it turned into... It was actually a fraud. The machine didn't work. So... Did your garbage briquette ever explode? Did you keep your briquette?
I'm sure I did. I don't remember. We had so many strange items there, strange things. But that does ring a bell. I don't think I ever did anything with the briquette. I mean, if I kept it, in the moves that I've made, it certainly disappeared. But that was a wonderful show. I loved that show. And I thought it was fun to do, and I loved Arlene Francis and Soupy Sales and, you know, John Daly and all those people that I met on that show. Kitty Carlisle.
Oh, wow.
And
who else was on What's My Line?
Dorothy the...
Kilgallen?
The journalist. Kilgallen. She was wonderful. When I replaced her, you know, that was around the time of the Kennedy assassination. And years later, I got a call from somebody asking me questions about that time, what was going on in the green room when I replaced her, because she couldn't be there, having had suffered from a fall in her home. And it was rumored that she had information about the assassination and that the fall in the home was not really an accident. I don't know. I'm sure they've written a lot about that, but 'cause rumors tend to grow larger as time goes on. I don't know what they've never proven anything that she had any information, but she never revealed anything.
I think it was Bobby Kennedy sneaking up behind her and grabbing her boobs, which was, you know, he slipped, she slipped.
She loved that.
Yeah.
She loved Johnny Ray.
Johnny
she
Ray?
She was in love with him.
Oh.
But it was fun.
Another so. off the wall question. You were in a show. Did you have a monkey or any monkey stories as far as...
Me and the chimp. Yep. Can you imagine Gary Marshall doing Odd Couple, Laverne and Shirley, Happy Days, and then me and the chimp? Who knew?
Who knew?
It was going to be like that. That chimp was actually, I had to sort of stop being nice to the chimp because the chimp was falling in love with me.
Oh.
And we couldn't control how he would stop listening to his trainer. And the trainer said, you know, he's going to be overprotective of you. And if anybody tries to come near you, he'll go kill him. So we've got to try to break up this relationship between you and this chimpanzee.
Oh, God.
And I remember when Peggy Katz had done that show with the chimps and Jack Weston. And before mine, I forgot what the name of it was. Sorry, I can't remember all these names. But she said, oh, you're going to do a show with a chimpanzee? Well, I said, yeah, that's why I'm asking you what it's like. And she said, find out what Ted Bessel is like, because I love the chimps. I didn't like Jack Weston.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Yeah.
Ouch. I was hoping for also more of those stories. I think it was Dave, it wasn't Dave Garraway, because he had J. Fred Muggs, but there was somebody on morning television who thought it would be a really fun idea to test the phrase "more fun than a barrel of monkeys"? So they brought a barrel of monkeys to the TV studio.
No.
Yes. They brought in this barrel, and then what do you think happens when you open a barrel of monkeys?
I can imagine. My God.
Yeah, they were cleaning the set for like a week. I wish I'd been alive at that point to experience that moment.
Boy, that must have been something. But they were everywhere.
Oh, but your chip was reasonably well behaved. They also was in love
he
with you.
He was well
so it
behaved.
Helped.
They had to. You know, we were at Warner Brothers, and a couple times he would run up, you know, up into the flies, all the way up, you know, on the stage, and we'd have to pause. We couldn't get him down, and then there was sometimes, you know, we would waste an hour at the most, I guess, trying to get that guy down from there.
Oh, God.
he just would fly off, although it was supposed to be a she named Jackie. Right. It was a male chimp.
Actually, they had that same trouble with Dustin Hoffman on his movies. He'd just go up into the lights, and 2 hours later, he'd come on down. Last couple of quick questions for Anita Gillette, who will be appearing at Birdland this Monday, 7 o'clock, in her autobiographical show, After All. Do not... I mean, if the past half hour or so has given you any indication, you have to go see her at Birdland this Monday. I wanted to ask you, though, do you have a favorite role that you've ever done?
Actually, I do. I think that the most perfectly written role was Eliza Doolittle.
Oh.
It was Straightshaw. And that wonderful score, and an incredibly good acting challenge for me. That's where I think I picked up my acting chops from the man who had taken over from Rex Harrison, Michael Allinson, and we did an 11-week tour of that, My Fair Lady, and it was glorious because I was learning every day more and more about my craft. And with a book like that and a score like that, I think it was the most perfectly, as I say, crafted role I've ever done. And of course, that in the musical department. And Chapter 2, of course, is my favorite play.
You get that great speech. I mean, that's the speech that nails it. Wonderful. Wonderful stuff. Now, it's...
In every monologue book now for young kids.
Sure.
Yeah.
And before we say farewell to Anita Gillette, I it's not a secret, you know, it's on Wikipedia, I guess it's on Internet Broadway Database. You are turning, or you have turned, 75 years old. So...
Yes.
Thoughts?
Can't lie about my age with the damn Internet now.
I know. Because you could pass for lately 50s, so, you know,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, but...
That's good for my age, actually.
Of course, how do you feel?
But the thing is that, you know, that some of those sites put up things that are, what do you call them, algorithms or, you know, that computer-generated information.
Yeah.
Like, they say I'm best known for Another World, instead of saying I'm best known for Moonstruck, for instance, which is one of the best movies I have ever seen, and I was in that. They wouldn't say, you know, I hate when you can't get that things changed.
Well,
I don't mind they say my age, but, I mean, I do mind, but because they shouldn't put that as the first thing any casting people see. I think it's a ageism. I think it shouldn't be. Because, as you say, I could do roles all over the place. I could do roles that are 10 years at least. I know, younger than what I am. And they see that my birthday, first thing. Then they see Best Known for Another World. This is on IMDb. And then they don't go any further because they think I'm an old soap actor. Not that I have anything against soaps because I love doing it. But I've done so much else.
Well,
and they won't... And that's just wrong. That they should... Somebody was bringing a lawsuit against them about it. I don't know whatever happened with it, because they said it's ageism.
Well, at least the and I was it's funny. I was interviewing George Chakiris last week, the Oscar winner from West Side Story, and he was saying some similar things about what you find on the internet. And he mentioned Wikipedia, and I didn't get a chance to tell him, but I will tell you. You know, Wikipedia, you can change. you can do your own bio on Wikipedia if you want to. You know that, right?
Yes, that I know.
So
I know you can change that, but they don't say I'm best known for Another World. And if they can look up your age anywhere else, what's the point of changing that on Wikipedia?
Well, that's like the first place people go, I think.
You know, people in the know go. What I'm worried about is because the IMDb site is for professionals.
Right.
It's where casting people who are 23 years old who don't know you go to look you up. And it's just wrong, and it's bad. And even our unions are trying to get rid of that kind of information.
Hmm.
But I don't care. As long as I work and as long as I stay healthy and I'm and I'm happy.
And of course,
you know, I'm going to go into a play with Sam Gold as directing. I'm doing The Big Meal at Playwrights Horizon.
When is that?
And I start rehearsals on the 7th of February for that.
Oh, wow, I did not know that. That's, huh.
Yeah, so I'm a busy little bee.
Well, people can catch your buzz by going to Birdland this Monday, January 30th, to see After All with the wonderful, the absolutely delightful Anika Cho. Oh, and by the way, I just while you were talking, I went on to IMDb, and the first thing that you see is that you were on Quincy. That's the very first thing that they bring up.
They changed it?
Well, when you go to IMDb and you click on Anika Gillette, it says trivia.
Uh-huh.
On Quincy, you play Quincy's wife as two different characters. So you see that before anything else, even before your birth. And then you can say you and Olympia Dukakis had the same on-screen love interest twice on Search for Tomorrow and Moonstruck.
They say that in the beginning?
Well, here, when you get to a computer, you will see if you go to IMDb and you click on yourself is the first thing you see is a trivia name. And then it will go to known, when you start scrolling down to known, you're checking now, aren't you? It'll say CSI comes up first, Law and Order comes up first, 30 Rock, that wonderful Luga Christmas episode, Cold Case. So, I mean, I think it's pretty much, it doesn't even get to Another World until you scroll way down.
IMDb, okay, here I'm going. Because maybe they changed it. I don't know.
Maybe they, well,
I'm
they ought to. They
my name in IMDb.
Okay, do it up. Live radio, don't you love it, people?
No, on mine it says number one. If you know, just the IMDb, you type in Anita Gillette, and there are two names that come up, and I clicked on mine, and it says, number one, Anita Gillette, actress, Another World, 1964.
Wait a minute. All right, hold on, because I did the same thing that you just did. I'm going to do it right now. And, I see. That's only, I see. Oh, So, I know, I see what you're saying.
Somebody named Anita Nicole Gillette.
No, okay. Yeah,
Dana
it is
Gillette.
The first... I see. Okay. She's right. It is the kind of the first line that you see, but the minute you
now
click on your name...
trivia is the first thing.
Yeah, okay.
And then it says born.
Yeah.
But at least they have the trivia thing before they have the born thing.
Right. Yeah, no, you're right in the fact that, yes, it is... When you first see the list of people who are named Anika Gillette or like Anika Gillette, that's... Okay, it's Another World.
The list.
I didn't even look at that. I just clicked on your name, and then that brought me to Quincy. But you're right. I guess that is kind of annoying when your first credit is from 1964. You know, and that...
Gotcha. It's just that in some of them it used to say best known for. And now it doesn't... known for. And then they have a TV set that says Another World. That's before Moonstruck.
Right.
And then they Shall We Dance, and then She's the One with Eddie Burns.
Well, you know, I mean, you've done so much, and the main thing is to continue doing so much, doing plays at Playwrights Horizons, doing obviously the cabaret show, doing more 30 Rocks if they ask you to, and then you'll be known for those. That's the thing you'll be most known for, maybe you haven't even done yet. How's that for a way of thinking?
Who knows? Maybe isn't that promising? That's what older folk like I need.
Yeah, that sense of, you know, I haven't done the female King Lear yet. That's still on my horizon, or whatever it is.
Well, honey, that's why I'm doing this show. It's because I've never done it. It's like, you know, climbing Mount Everest. And I think about it, and I think, what am I doing? Why don't I just stay home? You know, and am I going to be nervous? Am I going to remember that, hold on to that, you know, for four counts instead of eight because we just changed that, you know? But it's all right. I have to just get up there. As Jim Caruso says, it's a big party, Anita. Just pretend you're at a party.
Exactly. And if people are happy to be there and happy to see you, and if you make a little boo-boo, they get they'll just applaud. They'll laugh, and they'll want you to go on, and your pianist
That's
will correct
right.
you. You know,
the thing I can't, you know, when I was at the Smithsonian doing a talk there years ago, and Pat Carroll I used as my interviewer, and it was just not to sing, but those people in the audience asked me to sing The Secret Service Makes Me Nervous. And somebody came up that knew the song, played the piano, and I said, but I haven't sung this for years, and I'm not sure of the lyrics. Everybody in the audience knew the lyrics to The Secret Service. I could not believe it. and they helped me along with it.
And I'll bet you you'll have a similar experience, I promise you, a similar experience at Birdland this Monday. So everybody, people, if you don't know the lyrics to The Secret Service, learn them over the weekend, and then go to Birdland and sing them with Anita. So there you go.
Okay.
Anita, it has been an absolute delight. It's been just a joy talking to you about your career, your life, Dustin Hoffman, monkeys, and any other thoughts, anything you want to share with our audience?
An autopsy.
Oh, that's right, dead animals on a slab. I wish you much great health, much success with the upcoming play, of course, with your cabaret show, with all your TV work, too, really. And the Ed Burns film, of course. So,
yes.
Thank you so much again for being in
thank
the neighborhood.
Thank you, Dave.
Have a great weekend.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Me, too. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye.